The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. Liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller, with you on the Is it really the first day of December already? Holy mackerel, only 24 shopping days to Christmas, and who gives a damn? At any rate, how y'all doing here? I want to thank Ralph Winterode for sitting in for me yesterday. Had some networky business to do, and, well, we're here live today. And coming up in the second hour, for a program note here, I'm going to have Mark Anderson, a journalist, has written for the AFP. I think he's on his way out, or he's already there out in Phoenix. G. Edward Griffin is holding a deal out there, so we'll find out a little bit more what's going on there. And, well, folks, everybody on Wall Street's feeling pretty good. Do we have a couple clips out of Happy Days Are Here Again? And I'm sitting here scratching my head going, really? Stock market is starting to push to the Dow Jones Industrial Average is getting somewhere to about 20,000. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, boy. Now, a couple days ago, I reported they were expecting the Dow Jones to hit about 22,000 before it drops down. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, yeah? When was the last time we had an all-time record on a Dow Jones, and then we had something called a Black Tuesday in October of 1929? And a lot of people, economists, people that, and you got to be careful here, because sometimes when you listen to economists, all they are is just the cheap suit for the investment firms. Yeah, come on, I'll be your broker. They'll put up talking heads to talk about this stock and trends in the market and, well, what to stay away from or what stock would you buy today? Well, it's all overinflated, and it's inflating even more. And I smell a rat here. So we will see what happens. Janet Yellen is supposed to, boy, how would you like this for a Christmas present? Interest rates are going to be raised by Janet Yellen this month. I think they're preparing a Christmas present for you. Now, there is an upshot here. Pension funds, let me see, 2008 wiped out about half the retirement funds and the pension funds, about 50%, wiped them out completely. And we've been telling people for a number of years, you know, you got to check to see where that money gets parked at. Gets parked in the stock market, gets parked here, parked there. And you don't know if it's a fair valuation. Can they get the money back out? Well, a lot of people got caught in 2008 and their retirement funds went up in smoke. Why? Because these wonderful people that manage your funds, well, look where they're putting the money. And they're hedging your bet. It ain't their money. It's yours. And then they charge you a fee for it. But they're the all-knowing, all-seeing, and they can make you money. Well, I don't like the way this is shaping up. Some good news for the people in Canada. there is a lawsuit that's coming around here, and it's about the Bank of Canada once again being returned to what they were prior in foregone years. Let me just put it to you that way. Now, in 1935, during the depths of the Great Depression, the Bank of Canada was set up to lend money to the government for infrastructure projects. And these weren't small infrastructure. We're not talking about a water treatment or laying some sewer pipe in a city someplace. No, we're talking about some pretty damn big projects. And it's interesting because how they were able to do this, such as build little projects like the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway. And they did it by borrowing money at no interest. Well, mysteriously, I think in about 1974 or so, that changed. Around about the same time that the gold windows were closed here in the United States, all of a sudden, these investment banks weren't loaning any money to the Canadian government. Oh, yeah, that's right. They were loaning money. The middlemen were loaning money to the government of Canada at interest. At interest. So I'm going to play this, and you know, I could sit here and glean through the entire thing, make my crib notes, and make a presentation to you folks like, geez, John's really a smart guy. Well, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I'm not the dullest. And I don't like to steal the thunder from people that put all the stuff together. I could repackage it and remake it and make it mine, or at least make it appear to be mine. But I'd much rather go to the source and then have you people listen to it. Or I could interview Bill Still and bring him up and ask him all the questions. But he does a fine presentation. There's no interruptions. The information gets out. And I'm quite satisfied without putting my stamp or my ego on it. Here is Bill Still, probably one of the, and I kid him about this. And I'm going to have Bill Still on. By the way, while I'm thinking about that, Mikey, can you look in our guest list and see if we got Bill Still's number? I read your lips, and that's not what I want to hear. I didn't hear it, but I actually read it. But see if you can find it. At any rate, lawsuit to restore the power to the Bank of Canada to create sovereign money. Yeah, no, it's not really money per se. But the point about this is it doesn't carry the interest. You know, if I read the lines on Bill Still's face, it's the roadmap to a very intense and serious guy. And his information is generally spot on. Very studious and very serious man. Bill Still, report number 1372.
Good evening. I'm still reporting on the economy. December 7th in the United States is Pearl Harbor Day, the day that commemorates the Japanese sneak attack on the U.S. Navy base at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii on December 7th, 1941, where 2,403 Americans lost their lives. But in Canada, this coming December 7th, 6 days from today, the next phase in the fight to reconstitute the Bank of Canada will be heard at the Federal Court of Appeal, 180 Queen Street West in Toronto. What's at issue here? In 1935, during the depths of the Great Depression, the Bank of Canada was set up to lend money to the government for big infrastructure projects such as the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canadian Highway at no interest. This is the most important function of a national central bank. Why? Because then the government avoids paying interest on money they borrow on the commercial market, known as the national debt. But in addition, they take back control over the quantity of money in the national system. We will be covering this story whenever there is a new development. So first of all, let's take a look at a very informative recent interview the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation did with the lead attorney in this suit, Rocco Galati.
He's a kind of legal David known for tangling with Goliath-sized courtroom opponents. His peers seem to approve, electing him just last week to the bench that oversees them. His latest case may be his most contentious of his entire career.
Gulati has successfully sued the government before. Last year, when Prime Minister Stephen Harper nominated Quebec Judge Marc Nadon to the Supreme Court, Gulati stepped in, saying the move broke the rules. No one expected him to win. Gulati surprised them. His latest lawsuit targets the very role of the Bank of Canada. The bank was set up in 1935 in the wake of the Great Depression to provide a means for settling international accounts. The lawsuit claims the bank would also provide interest-free loans to government to finance infrastructure investments like the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway. The case argues that in 1974, the bank stopped providing interest-free loans to government and suggests the move was made to join the International Bank of Settlements, a kind of central bank of central banks. On behalf of his clients, Gulati argues that from then on, private banks became government's lender, a change he says contravened the act that established the central bank and was therefore unconstitutional. His client, the Committee on Monetary and Economic Reform, or COMER, is suing to force the bank to make those interest-free loans to government again. The bank hasn't filed a statement of defense, but says the case is frivolous. Still, Gulati is pressing ahead. When I caught up with Rocco Gulati recently, I wanted to know why it was important to bring the case now.
Well, my clients felt it was important. We initiated the claim in 2011. They felt it was important in the face of the financial sector meltdown in 2008, the banking meltdown, and the drastic reduction and elimination of human capital infrastructure, such as healthcare, universities, and basically the stuff that the Bank of Canada from 1938 to 1974 funded, which put us head and shoulders above most of the G8 countries in terms of financial stability and sustainable social services.
So if you are successful, what would happen after that? What's the next step?
If successful, the next step would be a request, another request to the Minister of Finance for interest-free loans for a particular infrastructure project or funding. And if the answer is no, we judicially review that on the legal test of reasonableness, which the courts have the jurisdiction to review.
Because what you're suggesting is that various levels of government, including provincial, could access interest-free loans, one would expect that the provinces might be quite interested in this case, even if the federal government isn't inherently interested in it. Why are they not more?
Well, they're not, because they've agreed as of 1974 to be bound by the orders and dictates of the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, which is in effect a central bank for central banks. Now, the only difference and problem is that Canada, most people don't know, is the only G8 country to have a public bank. There's a difference between a central bank and a public bank. Anybody can have a central bank. We do. Ours is public. The U.S. public central bank is a private bank, the Federal Reserve. The Bank of England is a private bank. So all the European banks are private. So you have foreign private bankers dictating to a public civil servant and Minister of Justice what to do in this regard of a law from Parliament.
Can we just make the distinction between private and public? Because we don't think of the Federal Reserve as private. We think of it as an arm of that government.
No, it's not. People have shares in that bank. It's like the Bank of Montreal or the TD Bank. It's a private bank. It's huge, but it's a private bank. They're beholden to their shareholders at the end of the day. So it's a private bank like any other.
So the notion is that because of all of those central banks' participation in the Bank of International Settlements, they are then manipulating what our public bank can do.
Correct. They're dictating what our public bank can do. The net effect of that is this. We effectively, through the Bank of Canada, have relinquished our sovereignty to private banking interests. We are saying to private individuals abroad, you can control our public bank, and we'll follow your dictates.
That Bank of International Settlements, though, of course, is designed to create stability globally. Central banks coordinate activities to some extent, but with that in mind, not with any kind of private gain for those banks in mind.
Well, look, that's not true what you just said. At the end of the day, that organization is there to secure the profitability of the central banks. We don't have necessarily a profit motive because we are a public bank. Those other central banks are private banks. So at the end of the day, profit is still the bottom line. It doesn't matter how you dress the chocolate. It's what's inside that counts. You know, I get a lot of people saying, you know, these are conspiracy theorists. And my answer often is, well, first of all, you have to look at the issue, look at the law. And often I respond to people by saying, if you think of my clients or myself are conspiracy theorists, then you must be a coincidence theorist. But the thing of it is that conspiracy is an indictable criminal code offense in Canada for good reason, because since Julius Caesar, conspiracies happen every day. They don't have to be nefarious. They can be very civil and in the open, but it's just a conspiracy. A conspiracy simply is an agreement to effect a certain end. It doesn't have to be criminal. It doesn't have to be nefarious. But so to say that they're conspiring, well, they're sitting down and they're agreeing to certain things and giving orders to our bank, which they shouldn't do under our Constitution.
Just argue for me or help me understand the counter-argument here. If the government, the federal government, could avoid paying massive amounts of interest on debt and borrow interest-free from the central bank, why wouldn't it choose to do that? What's the argument it would advance to say, no, that's the wrong thing to do?
Well, on the face of it, it says because the banking community, quote, the banking community would not like it. Well, that's saying foreign private bankers don't like it, and my answer to that is too bad. It's the law. Second of all, the Minister of Finance has repeatedly given this mantra that it creates inflation, which is nonsense and borne out by the fact that in 2008, when there was the financial collapse of the banks, the Obama administration gave $800 billion to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve simply created $800 billion. Interest-free, and bailed out the banks. We here, through the Bank of Canada, gave three banks $60 billion and secretly assumed their toxic debt of $160 billion through the defaulted CHMC mortgages. So none of that bailing out at 0% interest of the banks caused any inflation. So why should it cause inflation when it never did historically from 1938 to 1974?
So assume that things go as you would like, and that ultimately you can say to the finance minister, you must abide by this ruling, and he doesn't. Does this become a protracted legal fight around trying to change behaviors from people who don't want to borrow interest-free?
Well, most struggles to enforce the law are. I mean, often, you know, I've had cases that have gone 12 years successfully at the end of the day, because the government simply wants to ignore the law. It's not a new thing the governments ignore the law. I mean, but that's the system we have. When they do, the only people who can force them to abide by the law are the courts. And so,
what appealed to you about this case? What was it that, because it's sort of arcane, it's very complicated, but why did you say, yes, this is a fight I want to take on?
Well, it appealed to me because although it's arcane in the sense that, you know, anybody who knows something about economic theory and economic history may think, oh, this is arcane. This is the new flavor of the day. We don't use interest-free money. But it wasn't arcane for me because it's in the law. Whether it's arcane on the street is one thing, but the law says they can and do have the power to do this. The bank was created for that purpose, and now they've handed over the functioning of the bank with respect to currency and interest positions and policy to foreign private bankers, which causes two constitutional problems. One, under our Constitution, a government and the executive cannot refuse to govern. They have to apply the law. But here, they've given the application of the law surreptitiously to foreign private bankers. Well, that's unconstitutional. You can't relinquish sovereignty.
Rocco Galati's lawsuit against the Bank of Canada is the latest in a long line of legal battles he's brought against the federal government. But taking on those controversial cases comes with a price.
One of Galati's biggest breakthroughs came in 1999. He represented Mavis Baker, a domestic worker who had lived illegally in Canada for many years. The government had decided to deport her. Up until then, it did not have to disclose why. Galati lost the deportation appeal, but he struck a blow for democracy when the court agreed with him. Government should be publicly accountable for its decisions, a landmark ruling that changed government forever. No one is underestimating Galati in his latest fight over the Bank of Canada's business. His cases can seem improbable, but Galati has a long history of coming from nowhere to win. In the second part of our conversation, I wanted to know more about what motivates him and why he thinks governments need challenging.
I've been taking on government successfully since the mid-90s and in 99 at the Supreme Court level. I have sued ex-Prime Minister Kretchen's government and Prime Minister Kretchen more times than I've sued the current government. For me, it's not about a particular government. When government goes astray, in a constitutional democracy, there are only two checks and balances to a government going astray and going wayward of the law and the Constitution. One is the opposition in Parliament. One is the parliamentary system, which in my respectful view, starting with the prime ministership of Jean Chrétien, became pointless and useless. It's a charade. The other more important balance to executive action and parliamentary excesses of the Constitution are the courts. That's the only... If you take away the courts, then you have what I say has been happening slowly in Canada, is a quiet dictatorship. If you take the judicial check and balance away from the executive and parliament, you have one-man rule, unrestrained.
Which I think many will argue is the ultimate importance of the Nadon case.
Of course, that's why I took it on. I saw an attempt to pervert and subvert our independent judiciary, which is the last bastion of balancing the rights of the citizens as against the government and making sure that the government doesn't turn into a dictatorship. If you can stack the court and corrupt the judiciary, well, that's it. It's complete.
Do you believe that the way the court ruled on that, the language it used, the expression, is an acknowledgement of that, that the court needs to protect itself from meddling?
Clearly, that's why it constitutionalized itself. Most people don't understand the seismic importance of that decision. It said, you can't do anything with this court without the consent of all 10 provinces on a constitutional amendment. Something that would not have been affected if they tried. Because you can't get 10 provinces to agree. And so, yeah, that was the seismic import of that case. It protected the court. The court took the occasion by us bringing the case to the court to constitutionalize itself.
Is it frustrating to you, when you look back, the way that case was covered, it never did point to that issue. Oh, yeah. It's only in the aftermath that people will look back and say something important happened there that was a good important thing. When it was being covered, it was, who is this pesky guy? Why is he chipping away at the prime minister? You know, what does it matter? Is that frustrating?
That's frustrating, but I have a long history of this in terms of, you know, back in the 90s, I challenged the constitutionality of the Multilateral Agreement on Investment in the OECD. I was a lawyer who went to the Supreme Court, didn't get leave on the 201 Summit of the Americas in Quebec City for the protesters, and we challenged the FTAA, that trade deal. And so I'm used to this. And in a lot of my cases, that I win. In every single one case that I take, the government response is always, it's ludicrous. The press saying, what's he going on about now? It's got no merit. And in fairness to the government, in 37% of the time, they're right. I lose 37% of my cases. But in the other 63%, they still have the same mantra. It's no merit. Let's get it out of the courts. But, you know, this is part of the battle that you go through when you engage in constitutional litigation.
You're not doing this to get rich.
No, I'm not doing this to get rich. I could, you know, I'm a tax lawyer by training and profession. If I wanted to be rich, I'd do nothing but tax cases.
In fact, even in some successful cases, you have spent more than you've been awarded in costs.
Well, in the Nadon case, I put out $42,000. I was awarded half of $5,000, including HST and disbursements, which means I was awarded nothing.
So you're essentially making a personal investment in these cases.
As a citizen, as a lawyer, yeah, somebody's got to do it. It's like the challenge we brought to the new Citizenship Act, which is now in the Federal Court of Appeal, where they purport to be able to strip a Canadian-born citizen of his citizenship or her citizenship. I mean, that's been unheard of since 1608, when they tried it for the first time, and 14 judges, including Lord Cook, said, no, you can't. If you're born here, that's it. End of story. So,
why aren't there more lawyers doing what you're doing?
Primarily three reasons. One is that every lawyer in the country except two of us, me and my associate that I've met, wants to be a Supreme Court of Canada judge. It's a bit delusional, but everybody is a titan in their own mind. Secondly, people don't, you know, people have to raise their family and pay their expenses. They don't want to be liable to personally pay these costs. And thirdly, to be frank, we do a bad job of teaching and encouraging constitutional law and thinking outside the box and thinking that there is something more supreme than Parliament. Because when we patriated the Constitution, as the Supreme Court has pointed out many times, we no longer live in a parliamentary supremacy. We live in a constitutional supremacy. And so Parliament has to keep within the limits of its powers.
You, in fact, one of your early victories was forcing governments to be accountable for decisions that they make, for rulings that they make.
Yeah.
And I think in legal circles, people would point to that as a hugely important development.
Right. In 1999, I co-counseled for Roger Rowe, who was a prime counsel on that, on the Baker case, which broke 200 years of administrative law that said any time a government official makes a decision that affects your life or livelihood, they have to give you written reasons. It wasn't the law before that. But more importantly, that case also ruled something else, that when interpreting domestic Canadian law, we must comply with international treaty norms, whether we've signed the treaty, whether we've ratified the treaty or not. We are the only country in the Western world in any democracy that has that ruling, which keeps us in check so we don't go too far astray.
How do you decide whether a case is something you want to do or not?
I tend to decide on whether or not it has to have a constitutional issue, and it's got to go to the integrity of governance or the violation of somebody's rights, that are human rights or charter rights. That's how I decide to take a case. Otherwise, if you want a divorce settlement, you go somewhere else, because I think reasonable people should reasonably solve their own private problems. I only do cases against the government, because when the government's after you, there is no making a deal.
And have you paid a price other than the costs that can be involved, the personal time commitment? Have you paid a price for that, for being this thorn in the government side over time?
Oh, I'm sure. I'll never get a judicial appointment. I've never had an interview when I've applied to teach at law faculties. I've applied 147 times, never got a single interview. And so people personalize things. They don't look at the issues often. They don't look at the person. They simply make a prejudgment of the issue through the lawyer. And Aristotle told us, don't judge the messenger, judge the message. And so I'm okay with that, in the sense that, it is what it is. That's our culture. We tend to bring it to that level. Other societies don't. In the States, they openly litigate things without personalizing it.
And in this case, what is your hope? What changes post the ruling that you're hoping for?
My hope is that the court declare that the government is bound by the legislation and cannot simply hand over that decision-making to foreign private bankers. What the government then does is up to the government, but they can't simply arbitrarily say no, never again, when the law is there and the history of the reason for creating the Bank of Canada is there. Most people should realize we use this Bank of Canada interest-free loan mechanism to pay for World War II, the Trans-Canada Highway, the St. Lawrence Seaway, and all the explosion of all the universities and hospitals and schools that were built in the 60s up until 74 were all built using interest-free loans from the Bank of Canada. And you know what? It didn't affect inflation in the least. In fact, the inflation rate since 74 to now is much higher than it was from 38 to 1974.
That was actually aired on CBC, on television, in Canada. And it's called The Exchange with Amanda Lang and Rocco Galati. You gotta love a man named Rocco. Jeez, have we seen anything like that on our airwaves here in America?
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
If you have sciatica, then you know all about the crippling pain that travels from your lower back down your leg when a spasm occurs. It's brutal. In fact, it's enough to take your breath away. Dr. Zhang's sciatica nerve cream helps relieve persistent, shooting pains associated with the sciatic nerve in the lower back and legs. This natural, homeopathic cream contains the most potent ingredients to soothe even the most excruciating pain associated with sciatica. Stop the pain now. Ask for Dr. Zhang's sciatica nerve cream at your local health food store or go online to TraskNutrition.com. We'll be right back.
Would you like relief from muscle pain, headaches, and discomfort to sleep better, have more energy during the day, and just feel naturally amazing? Fibromalic can help. Its blend of malic acid and magnesium can provide pain relief and comfort for those who experience fibromyalgia. It helps your body absorb more oxygen, and it works quickly for a significant reduction in pain within 48 hours, all without a prescription. Ask for Fibromalic at health and vitamin shops or shop fibromalic.com.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Bill still posts that stuff on YouTube. Now, I found that to be incredibly informative, really gutsy of, I mean, gutsy for CBC News to run that. And I'm just absolutely amazed. Do you know how many views that video got on YouTube? 6,906 views. But you can go to the populist talking head in the alt-media fake news and, you know, they'll get a million and a half views on something that is absolutely, in my estimation, yeah, it might be pretty good information, but not really germane to the problems we face in this country. It's more picking out the conservative versus the liberal or progressive or communist or whatever. Misdirection or stupidity, I don't know which it is. But this is a fundamental flaw that we have in this country, and we've been battling it for 103 years. 103 years. You know, if I was Donald Trump, I would love to have somebody on staff named Rocco. And says, well, Mr. Trump, you know, you talked about, you know, rebuilding America. Well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do it if you use investment banks that are private and not a public bank? How are you going to exactly do that? And so far, what I've been able to understand of Trump's grand plan here, yeah, he wants to put millions of people back to work, wants to renegotiate trade deals, and I get that. And, yeah, the companies that come back, it'll get a little break here on rules, regulations, and, well, the stifling environment that has been going on in this country for how many years? Specifically designed to do one thing, chase them the hell out. And I don't see this, I see it as sound business from their standpoint, rather than a grand conspiracy that the cabal gets in one gigantic room, eats caviar hors d'oeuvres, and sits around and drinks very expensive champagne, and has a seven-course meal. And then they sit around and smoke cigars and drink very expensive Napoleon brandy, trying to figure out how to screw people. A lot of this decision-making, folks, is not a conspiratorial as much as it is just plain business. And how do we make money? I'm not saying all of them. A lot of these creatures hold views and political views, more importantly, that you and I would consider to be distasteful. And that's putting it mildly. But we have a problem here. Mark Wahlberg just came out the other day and said, you know what? Hollywood should stay the hell out of politics. Yeah. Hell, the politicians should stay out of politics. So I think Trump's idea here is, yeah, we're going to bring back corporations and jobs. It's all over the news that the Carrier Corporation, 1,100 people, folks, drumroll, 1,100 people are not going to be facing layoffs because their 1,100 jobs are going to remain safe because Carrier's not moving to Mexico. Okay. Hooray for those 1,100 people. Now, if it was 11 million, or probably closer, we got, what, 95 million people, eligible people to work in this country that don't have a job? One-third of the population out of work? Yeah, it's going to be a real slow roll to bring these corporations back in, set them back up, people to go back to work, start paying taxes into the public coffers. Or I'm sorry, the corporations' coffers. Let's not forget how things are structured. But wait a minute. I don't have enough lifetimes to see a major dividend and payoff there. Do you? I don't. So maybe, Rocco is the kind of guy that doesn't go away. It takes him years and years to put these cases together and then resubmit them once they're kicked out of court. You know, for being some kind of conspiracy theory. It's not a theory. Banking is not a theory. It's a practice. It's a policy. So here we sit, $150 trillion in debt at minimum. And this was several years ago. It was estimated it would take about $3 trillion. That's with a T, folks, $3 trillion just to bring up our infrastructure to a previously known, level of sanity. In other words, chunks of bridges aren't falling through your windshield as you drive them underneath them on your highways, where you're not being swallowed up or your front end doesn't get just absolutely destroyed because you dropped into a sinkhole that, well, probably if you look deep enough, probably goes to China. We, at one time, didn't have a problem maintaining our structure, maintaining sane levels of usefulness in this country. But now we do. And the debt keeps climbing. And the interest keeps running. And there is absolutely no way out of this. Without taking a different direction, folks, I can make you this guarantee. 100% certified, John Stadtmiller, USDA approved. We will have a financial crash of which we will not recover. If we allow the international banksters, the central bankers, which are foreign bankers, to be allowed to keep conducting business in this country. Now, the happy medium for these, well, the banking community, as they like to be called, for the private consumer, okay, we'll charge you a little bit of interest. For government, which is by far the biggest borrower, they get it interest-free. And you notice what Mr. Galati said. It didn't fuel inflation. And we're talking billions and billions and billions, and I don't even know how much money it costs to build a damn St. Lawrence Seaway. Or try building a highway across the country that's as big as Canada. It ain't cheap. But how in God's green earth can the government borrow enough money to redo the infrastructure and then have the juice added on top of that? It's impossible to do. Oh, well, it would be possible, but it would, quote unquote, break the bank or the country that was doing business with these foreign bankers. Folks, there could be a whole new, hope, and hell, you'd have a lot of change left in your pocket if the banking system in this country was redone. You know, Mike, have you ever seen Mikey? Can't see your face. Rotate your crippled self around here so I can see your puss. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing near you. I don't know why I find it so funny, but I'm not mocking your disability. That's a broken leg. What the hell? You're young. You heal fast. Have you ever heard of anything like this ever being talked about on U.S. media like I just played? I mean, and you know, I'm kind of hard on Canada. I'm certainly hard on the United States, but... You know, Canada is not the United States. Well, are we or aren't we? Because there has been absolutely no check and balance in this country. Nothing to say, look, the Constitution trumps all. No joke intended there. But you know what? You just can't start ruling hither and yon from some federal courtroom as you see fit. No. You got a better idea, put it through the process, but here's what it's got to do. It's got to pass the constitutional muster. Folks, we already have the rule book. And what are we going to be doing? Sitting around waiting for Donald Trump to do what? Mike, have you ever watched the series The Blacklist? A little bit. Well, over Thanksgiving, I had nothing else to do. And you argued with me on this one. I actually watched 3 seasons of that. Back to back to back to back to back. I mean, there was, what, about 75 hours. Well, minus the commercials, it's like 44 minutes. 45 minutes, maybe. I have seen more stuff in that series coming from a perspective of being educated as to what's going on. Nah, folks, I'm not talking conspiracy theory or the CIA's new mantra here, fake news. I saw more released in that series on NBC than I have in a lot of areas on the internet. But only if you've got the eyes to see. That's the point. And in the meantime, here in this country, our children are getting dumber. Our economy is getting worse. The hope and future of America seems to be pretty tenuous, and everything's being hung on Donald Trump. Really? Well, if he were king or emperor, maybe that might make a difference. Instead of getting up there and saying, you're fired, I'm going to send you to the guillotine. You're going to get your head cut off. But where is Mr. Trump's standards? He was a Democrat, now he's a Republican. Did we need a billionaire businessman to roll into town to show us the way? Making up for what? Our lack of knowledge? Our engagement in our own government? 67 episodes. You looked that one up, didn't you? Okay, 67 episodes. I won't tell the listening audience you called me a liar either. You probably watched half of it. No, I watched every damn one of them. Because I didn't have anything else. I wasn't cooking any turkeys for Thanksgiving. I had nobody to entertain. Didn't have to sit around and think, well, gee, should we put up the Christmas tree this year? Should we put it up this early? Not interested. November 24th and December 25th, for me, is just going to be another day of a month. I'm going to have to get Bill Still on. BillStill.com. He's a serious guy doing some serious stuff. I've yet to see one of his, and he puts it out as Bill Still Reporting. And the way he says it is, it's Bill Still Reporting. But it's good stuff. I would suggest that you bookmark it and pay attention to what the guy is saying. And if you think the economy is getting better, there was something that I was noticing with these discount dollar stores. What do we have out there? Dollar General. There's a couple of them that went belly up. Dollar Tree. Which one is still out there open and functioning? Dollar General. But I noticed something that happened with Dollar General over the last couple of years. It used to be that you go in there and get discounted stuff. You know, stuff that's got a born-on date that it's reaching its expiration date, but it's still good. You can still go and buy it for half the cost of normal retail. And then I saw them turning themselves into retail stores, completely walking away from the people that they were serving before, and that was generally people with incomes that were severely squeezed. Dollar General's startling admission, half of U.S. consumers are feeling more dire than ever. When we last looked at the performance of deep discount retailer Dollar General 3 months ago, we found something troubling. Company CEO Todd Vasos, who badly missed its earning expectations, admitted in the second quarter conference call that he was surprised to admit that while on the surface things are supposed to be getting better, the reality is vastly different for low-income consumers. Which pretty much puts all of the middle class in low income now, in case you've missed that little point. He said, I know that when we look at globally the overall U.S. population, it seems that things are getting better, but when you really start breaking it down and looking at the core consumer that we serve on the lower economic scale that's out there, that demographic, things have not gotten any better for her or him, and arguably they're worse. And they're worse because rents are accelerating, healthcare is accelerating at a very rapid clip. Making matters worse, he added that the company's core consumers base, 65% of which is comprised of lower income shoppers, I think that's an overestimation, because I think that's the new, I think that's the new consumer that has been created by this crappy economy, then I think probably 30-35% of that is the new lower income shopper that used to be referred to as a middle income shopper. It says it's been impacted by the recent reduction or elimination in food stamps. Now couple that in upwards of 20 states
where they have reduced or eliminated the SNAP benefits, and it's really put a toll on the core consumer. He elaborated that the reduction in food stamp benefits promptly filtered through the entire business model and culminated with Dollar General being forced to cut prices to remain competitive. Well, there's Dollar General being competitive with whom's left? What I said, who's left out there? Who are you competing with? He went on to say, the CEO said, the core consumer, I tell you, has gotten no better as far as, and they keep referring to it as her, which I find really distasteful, and I think that's chauvinistic. I'm just teasing. Just kidding. No phone calls. Matter of fact, the shopper tells us when we're out in the stores or even through all of our panel data that we do, that while things haven't gotten a lot worse as far as the income coming in, other than recent SNAP decrease, my expenditures are going up at a very rapid rate. Healthcare is one of the big ones because most of our consumers, while she may be working, doesn't have healthcare. And we all know that she's having to pay now for this healthcare and being taxed on it. So it's really starting to play against that low-end consumer right now. In other words, what he's complaining about is all the escalating costs for everything else people have to pay for. Their disposable income is next to nil, and they're not even shopping in their stores.
Actually been on Balance of Nature for a year now. I have MS, and I recently had an MRI. This is the first year that I've had a stable MRI, so I'm thrilled. When I have an MRI with MS, usually there are glowing spots that come through, which is damage on the nerves in my brain and my spinal cord. And when they're glowing, it means they're active. And then my last MRI, they pulled it up, and I honestly couldn't believe that it was my MRI. There was nothing glowing. And in fact, the dark spots were shrinking. They were healing. And the doctor actually said to me, I think we're in remission. I was so happy. I had no idea that that could be my reality.
Call now to find out how to get your free month supply of Balance of Nature. Call 800-2468-751. That's 800-2468-751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com.
Use promo code TSL.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocholine therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org 800-326-2001.
Oh,
got Mark Anderson coming up in about 5 minutes on the program for today. I'm sorry? Dennis in Florida? Let me take Dennis here. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, John.
Hey.
Really nice talking to you again.
Yes, sir.
I make it real quick. You touched on something that I find profoundly important, the money system, which, you know, we know the vampires took over in 1913 or whatever they were. And what I find crucially important is if people would understand that if we could take that power back, the power of creating money, we could really change the world. I mean, I think it's hard to, for people to wrap their mind around it. And I you know, when I woke up in about 9/11, when I finally woke out of my dream, that was the first thing I latched onto was understanding the money system. And if we could just take back creating money, we could really change this world. How do we do that, though? I mean, it's a monumental task.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be so concerned about changing the world. Because at one time, the world was based on private banking. You know, how this was sold to us in 1913, well, we had shocks and, you know, scam banks out there and banks that were going belly up. And it was just, in 1907, they had a real problem with private banks. So they got together with their people in Washington, D.C., came up with this nice little thing that they cooked up and said, look, we got to have stability. We can't have this state or this banking concern in this state or in this community or whatever screwing up and screwing the whole thing up. So we need to come in and we need to lay down a template that everybody understands and everybody deals with on a regular basis, no matter what state you're in. That's how it was sold. And for the longest time, it worked okay because, well, there wasn't any debt, you know, to speak of. People were, we just didn't have the massive debt that we have. But you're absolutely right, Dennis. And if we did that here in the United States and went back to that private banking system rather than this, or a public rather than this private, I should say, other countries would follow suit. They would look at the United States and go, well, okay, well, why is their economy booming? Why is this happening? Well, let's look at the core of it, and right there would be your answer. Whether it be backed by gold or silver or whatever, people are looking, Dennis, to have our debt now, our currency, backed by gold or silver. It's an impossibility. There's not enough of the stuff on the planet.
Exactly.
To back that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt? I know you're short on time. I don't think we should back our money by gold or silver. It's something finite at all. We should take the example of the central banks. They've created all this credit and all this, whatever you want to call it, money, out of nothing. They got away with it for 100 years. Why can't we just take that over and do the same thing for a good purpose?
Well, the whole idea behind backing it with currency is the government can't print more money than it has the ability to back with a commodity that is worth something. That was the whole idea behind backing a currency with a precious metal or a commodity, as they like to call it. Well, yeah. Well, it's not worked out well for us. We've had 100 years to sit back, look at the problem, and contemplate the solution of the problem, but nobody has the guts to do it. Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what, you want to upset the apple cart? And as I said before, how's Trump going to pay for all this stuff? Not with the system that we have, because it's getting ready to collapse.
Well, I hope it does, and I think good things will come from it.
Well, not before we go through some very bad times and all the creeps and the criminals we got out there skulking around. They're going to be hungry, and they're going to be looking for something that you got. That's the problem.
They can't have my blood, John. They got everything else. They can't have my blood.
Thank you for your call, Dennis.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.